get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
Cynical.
Practice.
Welcome to Positive Cynicism. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. It's very simple. And we have been talking about it. It is now official. There is a Jittery Monkey store. You go to jitterymonkey.com. You can order all your merchandise. Dreams are there. New shirts coming up whenever we come up with designs. Hopefully by the time you hear this, the Positive Cynicism has two or three different options. They make great stocking stuffers, holiday gifts. I encourage you to buy at least three of everything. I am joined for this episode. I was inspired by the amount of views that the Politicon episode got. So I thought, hey, let's go where the audience is. Let's talk politics because everybody loves talking politics in America today. So I brought on a friend who probably knows more about politics than I do, which... always dangerous to bring on someone smarter than you on a show that is your own show, but we'll see how that goes. I am joined by Brandon Cooley, and Brandon, welcome to the show, and please don't show me up too bad.
All right, thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm what you'd call a political junkie, probably. I'm one of the people that, on a good news day, watches CNN for quite a few hours. My major was political science. In the last year, I've done a lot of review, like, videos for the midterm campaigns, a lot of campaign ads and filming speeches, events. So it's definitely my favorite subject to talk about. So,
yes, I've brought you on because politics are all the rage in America today. And I've often said that anytime I deal with a serious topic or really any topic, I like to bring on someone with a differing opinion because I think it adds to a discussion instead of just two people saying, yes, this is great, or no, that's terrible. And you and I are a little bit different. I like to claim to be a moderate, but I know I lean a little conservative. By your Facebook post, I can tell that you're a little bit more liberal, and I know your family, so I know the liberal comes honestly.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, in terms of my own beliefs, I consider myself liberal or progressive, I guess, since from now. I'm not sure what the really difference is. But philosophically, I'm very progressive, very left. But practically speaking, though, you know, in terms of, you know, what kind of legislation to pass, I get that not one piece of legislation will solve all problems, you know, whether it's single payer or anything like that. So it depends on what the issue is. But I'm left in some issues, kind of moderate in others, so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, my point of view is you can't be, it seems like a lot of issues today, whether it be immigration, healthcare, whatever, it's all or nothing when it comes to debate. It's either open borders or you're a racist who hates everybody and doesn't want anybody in, and you either want everyone to have healthcare or you want everyone to die. And I think that the middle ground is what we need to work on. And understand that no issue has a simple solution, that you're going to have to compromise on something and see where something works. And unfortunately, in 20 years, you might have to go back and change that. But today, yep. We just want, no, it has to be my way or, you know.
And unfortunately, actually, I think the American people are fairly moderate in their views. But the only people that vote, though, are the ones that are far left or far right. So it's kind of it's ironic how that works. But, yeah.
I don't know if I'd say the only ones that vote, but I think the only ones whose voices you hear. I think, especially given social media status and the people that speak out more openly on there are the extreme cases. I think it's a vocal minority in America.
Yeah. I just meant, like, compared to other countries, America has lower voter turnout in most elections. Actually, in the last one, there was the 2018 midterms, there was a much bigger turnout than usual, so that's nice. But usually in midterms and like the primaries, it's a pretty low turnout. So you only get people that, like other countries. I mean, I think Australia requires like mandatory voting, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I think that's the country, but yeah, so it's very, it's higher in other countries, not as much as in America. So it's, you get what you vote for. That's all I have to say.
Well, speaking of that, that's one thing that I've had a problem with our American public. We were discussing this before, is that our Congress, I believe the numbers are 9 to 11% favorability mm-hmm. rating and a 90% reelection caucus, or not caucus, but result, where we keep sending the same people back and then complain about the job that they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure if it's because people just love their congressman that much, because I don't think they really know who they are. I think it's mostly they go to the ballot and they like see the R or D by their name and they just vote based on that. But so yeah, that, I think that's how it works. But yeah, it's unfortunate though. Yeah, but,
yeah, I think yeah. people vote party lines, which I am very mm-hmm. much against. I think you need to look yeah. at candidates and vote responsibly. But I also think that in the primaries, people vote for the name recognition.
Yeah.
And even in the presidential election, when you have the presidential primary, I think the media kind of sets up who they're angling for. And I think we can look at that in 2016, that the media kind of pushed Trump in there. And I mean, I have a whole list of reasons why I think Trump won, but one of them was the media kind of pushing him to be that favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the media concentrated a lot on Trump because they knew if they did, they'd get more views, they get more advertising, because people wanted to see what would happen back in, you know, when it started in late 2015. Now it depends on the network. Some of it was negative towards him in the beginning. And at first, like MSNBC, CNN, it always was negative, but I think Fox News kind of jumped on like it being positive toward Trump around when he was getting the nomination. But I think it was just, yeah, viewership. They just wanted to, it was such a, everybody was watching the news then because they just couldn't believe that he was getting that many votes in the beginning. He was always the front runner, you know, that people paid more attention to the primaries because of that.
Yeah, and I think my opinion is they wanted Trump in there too, because having a non-politician would have been easier road for Hillary Clinton to be able to win the presidency, because going up against someone who has no record to back up or mm-hmm. and really no opinion. I mean, is Trump a Republican? I don't think so. I think he will go with whichever way the wind's blowing, depending on yep. who's, you know, offering him up, offering a good deal. So, yep. but
I mean,
yeah,
he was a Democrat in New York City for decades, I think.
Yeah.
Because he actually said he had to be, because just the way the real estate business worked. But yeah.
Exactly. He's a businessman, which, yeah. you know, I also said was a good thing, because the fact that he's not a politician, you know, it's this weird kind of damned if we do, damned if we don't. But by not being a politician, he's not just redoing what politicians have done in the past. He's coming in kind of fresh ideas. Some sane, some insane, and just kind of doing what he wants to do. And if we could keep him off Twitter and keep him focused a little bit, might be good. But at the same time, you look at what's going on, and, you know, unemployment's down, the economy's up, except for today when the stock market kind of went down, the Bitcoin currency is kind of crashed, but North Korea isn't testing rockets and being crazy. So maybe there is some method to Trump's madness.
Actually, with the economy, with the last like 4 or 5 presidents, I don't think the presidents have much of an effect on the economy, because it's mostly cyclical, like the recessions and growth and all that, the way it works. I mean, when Obama left office, unemployment was 5%. It dropped down from like 7 in 2012. So now it's 3.9, roughly, somewhere around there. I don't know if any president like Trump or Obama have had much of an effect. Liberals will point out that it was Bush's fault that the recession happened in 2008, but then again, you could also blame some of Bill Clinton's policies, so it's not that simple, I don't think, with the economy. He's certainly done nothing wrong yet. The one thing I'm hesitant about with the tax cuts is that he did it at the wrong time, because usually you cut taxes during a recession to help people, not during the 8th year of growth. So the problem is that the deficits are kind of high right now. If there's a recession in the next 2 years, then there's no more tax cuts because we spent all the money. You know, the deficit has continued to increase in these last five, you know, these last couple of years, even though Republicans ran on cutting deficit, it's been increasing. So that's
yeah,
that's always been. But.
Yeah, deficit is always a problem, only for the party that's not in control. Yeah. The party that's in control doesn't really seem to care that much. But I mean, you made a good point about, you know, when Obama was in the presidency, any problems were blamed on Bush. I'm sure when Bush was in office, problems were blamed on Clinton. And one of it is just politics. But the other is, I think any type of legislation, any type of change takes years to really implement, to really see the effect. And that's why I think calling anybody a, you know, the best president, the worst president, whatever, you have to wait 20, 30 years to see what the outcome of their time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when they rank presidents, it's usually mostly about like symbolic, like kind of leadership, the way they, it's stuff that's not really related to, like, yeah, I mean, it's hard to judge a presidency at first until you wait, like you said, 10 or 20 years. But in terms of how they're going to judge Trump's presidency, we'll have to see, because it's only been a couple years. But right. His Twitter feed isn't helping. That's I'll put it that way. It's definitely going to go against him. But
yeah, I hope when he does the Trump presidential library that they just have one room that is all his tweets that you can just read.
Yeah. Yeah, or a published book.
But yeah, and that's, you know, we talked about this before. It's, from my opinion, I think people focus more on how something is said as opposed to what is said.
Mm-hmm.
And with Obama, I felt like he's a very articulate teleprompter reader and could, you know, just very calm and just had this persona of coolness, if you will, because people really loved him and flocked to him. Whereas Trump is the opposite, to where he's very abrasive, very just whatever he's thinking gets sent out on Twitter. And he says a lot of things, one, that he shouldn't, and two, in a way that he shouldn't. That is not very presidential. But then no one cares to really look at the underlying meaning and see what's happening. Case in point, you know, California has been under massive fires for the past few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Trump, one, made a statement about bad legislation from the California leadership, which is not something you do when people's houses are burning down and they're losing everything. Like,
sure.
You know, have some decorum there. But then he made a statement about raking the forest and cleaning up the timber. And I was going to look into this before we started recording, but apparently he got dragged for those comments. But then I think it was 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, Mother Jones, after California fires, Mother Jones, which is a very liberal publication, basically printed the same article, or an article saying the same thing about how California needs to do better brush cleanup. And, but it's like, so what Trump is saying isn't necessarily wrong, but the way he's saying it doesn't make people listen to him.
Sure. Yeah. I think he's just more of a divisive president than what we've ever had, because as much as like Democrats hated George W. Bush, after 9/11, no one really, like, George Bush was great at uniting the country after 9/11. Everybody agrees with that. But in terms of Donald Trump, though, I mean, I don't think he's very good at uniting both parties or both the American people, mainly because he just has this kind of just lack of, like, holding himself back. Maybe he just feels like whenever someone criticizes him, he has to hit back two times harder. You know, it's just that kind of like instinct he has, or just immaturity. You know, that's, I mean, it seems that way based on some of the comments he makes, but he hasn't had that kind of moment, like a 9/11 kind of moment where he has to unite the country. But I wonder what he would do in that case. Because I don't know, maybe he would kind of like step up to that, but you know, hopefully that won't happen. But
yeah, I was going to say, hopefully we won't have to find out, but I've said that once Trump won, if there would have been that like 2 or 3 months where people went, okay, we're not happy that he won, but let's see what he does, and then we'll be critical. Mm-hmm. It would be one thing, but instead it's like from election night, it's been, you know, Maxine Waters, Cory Booker, all these Democratic leaders have been like, we're going to impeach him, and then the Russian collusion story started being the talking point. And I think people, I just feel like, I should say, I'm not trying to defend Trump. I think he does have his issues, but I also think that people just have this hatred of him that no matter what he does, they're not going to like him, but they also can't explain why they don't like him other than I just don't like him.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's reasons why, like, I can count off in terms of policy or just his demeanor. I mean, like the Charlottesville thing was one of the worst moments, I think. Him kind of bowing down to Vladimir Putin and that the summit, different stuff like that, calling John McCain wasn't a war hero. There's also legislation like him pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, stuff like that. I mean, there's a list of stuff of the reasons why people don't like him. In terms of like people immediately like jumping on that, I think that the Russian collusion thing, I explained last time there's misconceptions about it. The big thing is that collusion isn't a crime, it's more about what's involved in collusion. Mm-hmm. And so far we've had indictments. Now whether or not that leads back to Trump, we're not sure yet. We have to wait for Mueller to finish his job. But so I disagree with Democrats who want to impeach him no matter what. That's not good. That's not a good policy to have. It's not a good good rhetoric, you know. So until the report comes out, I don't think they should be, you know, using that kind of rhetoric in order, because it does divide the country more.
I can understand, again, because it happens with every president. If you dislike them based on policy, legislation, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But just to hate someone and then be like, oh, we want to impeach just because we don't like them, just because we don't want them in office. Sure. And especially when you have sitting politicians, senators going out and kind of riling up their base saying this, like you said, I think it is more divisive, and it actually plays into his hand because it strengthens his support amongst his supporters.
Yeah, I mean, the last president who was impeached was Bill Clinton, and actually his approval rating went up because people kind of saw through that. It was, you know, it was an affair, which is bad, but had nothing to do with the policy or the job of the president. So when that happened, people were like, okay, well, this is bad, but we can't impeach him on this. And so its approval went up for him. So that's why I would never – I'm actually against impeaching Trump on any grounds, because you need conviction that requires two-thirds in the Senate, which they won't get. And even then, I would prefer for Trump to like lose in 2020 rather than be impeached and kind of have and convicted and have this kind of like this backlash against that, you know, against the system that would do that. So,
yeah, and I think
I'm confident that someone good is going to go up against him in 2020. So,
yeah, I was going to say real quick that, you know, this Russian collusion story that we've been hearing about for 2 years now, but we haven't seen any proof. And anytime a Democrat has been forced to say, what proof do you have, at point blank questioning, they have to say, well, we don't have any yet, but we know it's there. It's just finding. And it's given the amount of leaks and everything that has come out during this presidency, you would think if something was significant that somebody would say something, like we would know more. And so that's where I'm with you, that to me, I see a lot of parallels between Trump's presidency and Obama's presidency, and the Russian collusion story, I think, is kind of the liberals' Benghazi, where it's something that's going to be talked about for the rest of time, but no matter what the outcome, no one's going to be satisfied, and no one's going to believe yes or no, depending on their point of view.
Sure. Yeah, I think the big difference between that and Benghazi is that so far there have been indictments against Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, George Papadopoulos, and different people who are connected to Russia working on his campaign. But that's not collusion. Like, it's kind of like that thing where it depends on what's involved in collusion. So it's like, you know, it involves stuff like campaign finance law, stuff like Paul Manafort was involved in money laundering, I think. Mm-hmm. That was what he was convicted on. Stuff like small stuff like that, you know, not small stuff, but other issues like that. And so the question is, when Mueller submits his report, will that be involved with the Trump organization, you know, in his campaign? So we're not sure yet. We'll find out here pretty soon. Yeah. But I do think it's very interesting how Republicans have tried very hard to stop the investigation at all costs, which looks really bad, even if he's innocent. That looks – and Trump also fired Comey, which would be fine for a president to do, but he said – he told Lester Holt, I did it because of Russia.
Yeah. Well, and it's I think with the people that have been indicted, not saying that they shouldn't have been, but I question if this had been not been Trump, would they have been, would these cases have even been investigated? Or is this stuff that goes on pretty much more often than we would care to admit, but mm-hmm. because of Trump, they got caught up and trying to, you know, set that precedence to malign the Trump presidency.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it happens more often than, I mean, Russia, it's a whole other story of how they, Putin is involved with, you know, overthrowing, you know, leaders in Ukraine and Eastern Europe and all that. It's a whole different story with that. And whether or not he, I mean, here's the thing I told you. I mean, I mentioned this last time that, you know, did Russia come up with fake Facebook articles to try to sway people? Of course they did. But the question is that like, is it their fault for doing it, which it is, but is it also the American people's fault for reading the articles and sharing it, you know? And so you can't really stop it if people will still, you know, fall for it. It's like a con artist trying to, you know, it's the person's at fault for actually falling for it as well. So in that case, then you can't really stop the, you know, not to call it fake news. I mean, that's just the way people, you know, the way social media works now. So,
yeah, it's, I don't fail because I understand how people vote, as we discussed earlier, mm-hmm. that people would see something on Facebook and, or Twitter or whatever social media they're using and automatically assume that it's true. And it's, I think people have that innate decision that if it agrees with my preconceived opinion, obviously it's true. If it goes against it, then it's fake news.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, that's the big difference is, you know, not whether or not there's, you know, Russian trolls trying to sway me. It's whether or not people actually fall for it. You know, and you know, I see left wingers on my Facebook feed mm-hmm. because a lot of friends I know are more left wing. I don't ever share it. So it's, I don't usually ever read it either. I usually read my news from a few sources that are pretty reliable. So, you know, it's just, that's the way the American people are now at this point. They're very, you know, divided in their own camps and mm-hmm. only willing to read that kind of news. So.
Yeah, which is the other factor, like I said earlier in the show, and I keep repeating myself by saying, like I said, I brought you on because different opinions, so we kind of can express two different sides of the same story. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do fall into that echo chamber mentality where they don't even want to hear someone else's side. I had a discussion at work with a coworker who, when she found out that I wasn't left-leaning liberal, she's like, I don't want to fight. And I'm like, I'm not going to fight with you. I will have a discussion. I will present my views. I will listen to you, but I'm not going to fight. And if you go into it thinking that it's going to be a fight, you've already lost the conversation.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's interesting because that's how we are. That's the way we are right now as a country. It used to not be that way. I mean, there's a sitcom back in the day, one of the best called On the Family. For those of you who have actually seen it, you know, Archie Bunker and Mike Meathead, as he called them, you know, used to fight about politics all the time. That was the most popular sitcom in America. That would never happen today. I mean, maybe it would if this show like that came out, but it was normal back then to actually discuss politics and kind of debate it without, mm-hmm. you know, hating each other. But now it's gotten much more, vicious. It's maybe because of the culture war. I mean, that's, you know, it used to be that the politicians would, you know, compromise a lot more than they do now. But with certain things like abortion, you know, pro-choice, pro-life, gay marriage, certain things like that, there is no compromise. It's either yes or no. Maybe that's the reason why. Stuff like, you know, fiscal stuff like taxes, you can compromise on those. But those kind of social, civil liberty issues, you can't really compromise on that. So
right,
could be the reason why.
So you brought up 2020 earlier. Who do you see as, because from my perspective, the Democratic field is wide open. There are so many people that I think will try to challenge. And again, the way, you know, the economy is going right now, the way, if people pay attention to what is actually happening under Trump, I think the Democrats are going to have a bit of a uphill battle on their hands, because right now the only platform they seem to have is Orange Man Bad, as mm-hmm. the new meme is saying. So they don't really have everything. They've been so not abusive, but they've tried to block everything that Trump has done, but that hasn't stopped him and things have gone well. So what platform will they run on to try to upset him is going to be interesting. But who do you think will be some of the top names that
Well, a year ago, I would have said it was either going to be Joe Biden versus Bernie Sanders in the primaries. Now it might be Joe Biden versus Elizabeth Warren. But see, the Democrats, though, they like a new face. They like a fresh kind of new politician coming up. So, I mean, that leaves the field wide open. I mean, Beto O'Rourke is speculated to run, people like him. Kamala Harris, who's from California. Cory Booker, which I'm not a fan of, but, you know, he could run. Tulsi Gabbard's an interesting politician. She's from Hawaii. I've been kind of following her possible candidacy. People like them, it's going to be a lot of people. It's going to be 15, 16, you know, maybe even as high as 20 people, like the GOP primaries in 2016. In terms of their chances, economists are predicting a recession around 2020. Now, how big of a recession will it be, it'll depend on. We don't know that yet. With the economy, it's improved, but I would say marginally, because a lot of people, their wages haven't gone up by that much. A lot of middle-class voters, firms, a lot of the states that that gave Trump the presidency, like Pennsylvania, not so much Ohio, but Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, they did go blue this time. So I think it's going to be a really close race in 2020. Trump won by razor-thin margins. I mean, Clinton winning the popular vote doesn't matter, because the popular vote never matters, but what? You know, it was yeah, people always are surprised by it to hear that. Like, no, it's, you've seen this before, George Bush in 2000, doesn't matter. But yeah, those three states, or four states, you know, Florida, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, that's where it's going to be. That's going to be the focus in 2020. And Trump won by a very thin margin, so it'll be close.
What about Oprah?
It's an interesting idea. Yeah, the outsider. Yeah, actually, it's interesting. Michael Avenatti was going to be a very interesting candidate, but now the news about came out about the abuse allegations, and I think that sunk his presidency. That's any chance of him running. Now, Oprah, though, it's possible she's a good speaker, name recognition. I'm just not sure if she's going to run. I don't think she would choose to do that. I'd be surprised if she does. But the other billionaire is like Tom Steyer. I'm not really a big fan of him. Yeah. He's the impeachment guy. So.
Yeah. I mean, if Oprah ran, though, wouldn't it shine kind of the hypocrisy spotlight on the Democrats who have complained about Trump being a rich celebrity and then have Oprah come in?
Or sure, sort of. Although at the same time, though, Oprah is pretty successful. Trump went bankrupt like 4 or 5 times. So, you know, it depends on how you look at how a business person, how they, you know, what is success really mean? That kind of thing. But, it'd be interesting if Oprah ran, it'd be interesting to follow that. Yeah. Especially as a political junk, I'd love to watch them. I mean, to just see that kind of primary. But.
Yeah, well, I think the problem with Oprah running would then, especially if she was successful, would probably lead Kanye West to take up, be more serious in his threat to run. So.
Yeah, that'd be depressing if he decided to, but. Entertaining but depressing for our democracy.
Yeah, because again, it goes back to name brand recognition, and I don't even want to think about it. I'm not going to go there. Let's see, what else in the political world right now that we have going on?
Well, a big one is actually the House speakership. Democrats won the House, Republicans won the Senate, but right now, Nancy Pelosi was considered to be the shoe-in kind of to become the next speaker. She's getting some pushback now. And I'm actually, I want someone else to be speaker, not Nancy Pelosi. I'm not a big fan of her. I think that she's good at getting the votes, you know, getting the kind of whipping Democrats into voting for pieces of legislation, but she's bad at selling ideas. She famously said that they have to pass Obamacare to see what's in it. That was like back when they were trying to push it through Congress. She's not the best at selling ideas.
Well, and I think, I'm not a fan of Pelosi, but I also think that putting her back into that speakership is just kind of repeating the same thing. And I think if the Democrats want to be serious about a change in direction or something new, that someone else should step up. And I don't know who that person would be. I think there was someone who was challenging, but then the story came out that she had backed some judge who was up on a domestic abuse case, and then apparently he killed he's the suspect in his wife's death over the weekend. So probably not the best judge of character in that regard. Yeah. But yeah, someone else should step up, and I think Pelosi's time. Well, I think Pelosi's time as a politician is over anyway, and should be voted out. But
I think it was Tim Ryan from Ohio who's leading the opposition against Pelosi, but he's not actually running as speaker or trying to. So I'm not sure why he's leading the opposition. But yeah, he's the only person I know who really wants to see a different House speaker than Pelosi. But I think she'll be a speaker, though. I think that's, I mean, she has enough of a following in the Democratic Party. Kind of like Hillary Clinton, same way. She knew enough people. She knows enough people in the Democratic Party to become speaker, the same way that Clinton knew enough people. Enough of the people in the Democratic Party establishment to become nominee. Okay. So.
Yeah. Now, Pelosi brings up an interesting side topic that I am a big proponent of term limits. We have it for the presidency. We don't have it for Congress or Senate. But I always go to the poll and I look and see, okay, who's been there for more than two or three terms? Let's vote them out. When the Kavanaugh hearings were going on a couple months ago, you know, there were, I can't remember, it was Feinstein and I think Leahy and another one. They're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, when we were here for the Anita Hill testimony during the Clarence Thomas. And I'm like, that was 30 years ago. What are you still doing on the, you know, in politics? Are you a fan of term limits? And do you think that it will ever happen in Senate or House?
I am a fan of term limits. I don't think it'll ever happen because it's interesting in the Constitution, there are no term limits. The only reason why we have one for the presidency is because George Washington was such a great guy to actually step down after two terms. And that became the tradition. It became law after FDR because FDR is the one who passed that, mainly because of World War II, but he's the only one who went past two terms. And so it's the law now, but it wasn't before that. And with the Congress, I don't think that it'll ever happen because expecting Congress to essentially vote themselves out of office after a certain point is a bit asking a bit too much, I think, from them because, you know, they love to run for re-election, you know. It's funny, the job doesn't pay that well, but a lot of people in Congress are millionaires. Who would have thought? unfortunately, probably not, but I am for term limits.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is you mentioned money, and I think they say Washington has, like, the richest zip code in the surrounding area where all the politicians live. And the job itself might not pay well, which I think maybe putting a cap on the salary will also help, because it is supposed to be a public servant position, not a career choice. But yes, when you become a famous politician, or, you know, not even famous, you get the speaking engagements, you get the book deals, you get all this stuff that supplements your income. So yeah, why would you want to take away your own supply chain? But definitely, I think a lot of politicians overstay their welcome, and as we said, we keep voting them into office, so we don't hold them accountable for when they don't represent their constituents.
Yeah, as they say, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. So yeah, that's definitely the case with the Congress people not being voted out of office, 90% re-election rates. So. I mean, yeah, I think the midterms, it was kind of a win and a loss for both sides. Democrats won the House, Republicans lost the Senate. The government will be more divided than it will ever be. That would be the result, but what else is new, you know? I think that what's concerning to me with on the right is just the fear-mongering that it's more so than it ever has been. With George W. Bush, it was never like this. Like the caravan, you know, I just think it's interesting how, I mean, it got to the point where, for one, it started off from Honduras, so it wasn't even going to be here before Election Day. But Trump was saying there's going to be terrorists in the caravan and it was going to be just this invasion. And I think a lot of things like that have been, you know, his kind of strategy of motivating his own base to the point of even, you know, not even condemning neo-Nazis at Charlottesville. I think that's going to have damage to the even beyond his presidency, I think, because the question is who will they nominate after Trump. You know, I think that's kind of concerning. But
yeah, well, that brings up in Oregon, I think primarily, but has happened across the country as well. We have the Antifa movement, which is people claiming to be against fascism, and by being against fascism, they're trying to get everyone to believe and agree with everything that they agree and view, which is actually fascism in itself. But the Democrats have not come out because the Antifa movement is against Trump. But yet the Democrats themselves have not really come out and condemned the violence that is going on. And even during the 2016 election, when we kept hearing about how violent Trump's rallies were or whatever, the only people getting attacked, or the primary people getting attacked, were Trump supporters. So, and I don't disagree with your statement that Trump comments were poorly worded, but at the same time, and this goes back to an opinion I have, it's bad when Trump does something, it's either not reported or downplayed whenever the same thing happens from the other side.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I think, too, besides Antifa, actually, it's interesting, PETA has a large membership, but they're considered to be a domestic terrorist group by the FBI because some of its more extreme members do stuff like that to threaten people. Yeah, that's true. I'm just concerned that, I mean, that may happen if the next Democratic president we have, they may never condemn Antifa or different groups like that. I've just never seen any president do this. I mean, Obama and Bush never stooped to that level. So I'm just concerned that that's going to be the new norm. Just playing your own base. Kind of like that constant kind of campaigning that, you know, always looking for the next 2 years to, yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the issue. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem with politics, too, is by the time you get in, then your focus is on the reelection campaign. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, and that's where I think maybe if you had the term limits where you say, okay, you have these 4 years, or even if you do like one six-year term and say, okay, you have 6 years, do what you want. But it seems whenever you get in, like that first 2 or 3 years, especially as a senator or a representative, that you're not really doing anything because you're the junior member. You have to kind of earn your stripes.
Yeah.
So, sure. I don't know.
Yeah. I can't think of much else in the news, really. Yeah, it's just interesting because what separates politics now versus back in the day is that people just are in their own echo chambers, their own bubble, only watching their own news that they already agree with. I think that's going to be very dangerous in the future.
Well, and I mean, as someone who used to work in news, I don't like the 24-hour news cycle. I'm sure when Ted Turner founded CNN that he had good intentions, but now with all the cable news networks, there's not enough news to go around, and you get the problem where you have journalist and opinion personalities, and the line is blurred. It's not really identified like this is an opinion or this is news, and people who, like you said, watch it nonstop kind of blur the line of, is this actual news, or are you just telling me what you believe and then I'm taking it as fact?
Yeah, exactly. If it was actual investigative reporting, in-depth coverage or something, if it was 24 hours, that'd be great. But commentary is cheaper than investigative reporting. Yeah. So therefore, you have now the norm is just news commentary. It's just people, you know, the pundits going on there and commenting on what they think about the news. So there's no substance. That's the best way to put it.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this first edition. Let us know what you think, if we should keep doing these political discussions. I think we should, but you tell me your view. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. Brandon, you said you don't use Twitter. Do you want people looking you up?
I have a Twitter thing, but I haven't used it in a while. Kind of stopped using it the first couple of days, so it's not my thing. But no social media really right now. Just have a blog, not anymore. But.
It took me like 5-6 years to actually start using Twitter, so I didn't see the point. I don't know if I still do. I just use it to make fun of Kevin Hunsberger, the host of my 1-2-3 cents here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. So if you want to watch us Twitter fight, it's probably not that entertaining. Anyway, Brandon, thank you for your time. I know you're 3 hours later than I am, so it's pretty late out there. We will be in touch and have you back next month for a topic we'll decide later. So, thanks again. Any last words?
Everybody should, even if they don't like politics, just keep on reading the news or try to find the best news source and just be sure to always stay interested in with current events. And
And as we as we say here on Positive Cynicism, question everything, do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.